About the number of people shot by paramilitaries has doubled over the last year, whilst the number of security situation related deaths reached its highest for 8 years. The PSNI have released their annual crime statistics showing there were 61 shootings in 2016-17 compared to 36 the year before, sending 28 people to hospital. Republican paramilitaries have been responsible for the majority of the attacks, but a small number were carried out by loyalists, and apparently loyalists are more likely to beat people as opposed to shoot them. I want to speak to Detective Superintendent Tim Mears. Detective Mears, good morning.
Good morning, Frank. How are you?
These figures, we can look at them in many ways. Crime, the official figures are technically down. That's the first headline figure.
Yes, and I mean, that shows a continued reduction. It's the lowest levels of crime in 20 years in Northern Ireland, which I think, whilst we bear in mind that every single one of those crimes represents a victim and therefore is unacceptable, it's reassuring and encouraging that we're seeing Northern Ireland becoming a safer place than it has been in the past.
The problem, however, lies with these paramilitary gangs, the dissident Republicans, some people within loyalist circles as well. There seems to be a second tier of justice, for want of a better term, or injustice might be a more appropriate word, that runs parallel to policing.
Yes, absolutely. And I mean, I think what really jumps out from the figures yesterday and what concerns me, both as a citizen and as a police officer, is that we have seen in the last year a 29% increase in these types of attacks. Now, that's an increase on last year's figures, but actually it's the same level as 2014 and 15. 66 of those attacks involved beatings, and 28 of those were shootings. The victims that we saw suffering these brutal attacks ranged, the largest age group really that were impacted by this were 18 to 30 year olds, but frighteningly, whilst that in itself is traumatic, five of the victims in the last year were under 18 years old. And we would assess that the motivations really range and somewhat eat into this concept of it in any way being justice. People who suffered these attacks, from our perspective, were people who were in drugs debt, people who may be perceived to have been involved in local antisocial behaviour and criminality, but actually also a number of these were people, it was a case of mistaken identity, and also individuals who had been involved in minor fallouts with local criminals who felt that they actually had the authority to carry out these attacks.
You had four categories there, and the one that jumps out on this programme when people phone us is when it would be perceived to be some form of, for want of a better term, punishment attack because they did something in the community. They weren't one of the innocent ones. They weren't one of the ones who'd fallen foul of the drugs dealer and owed money. They were the person who had actually broken into an elderly citizen's home or had beaten up children when they were burgling somewhere. They are often described as the lowest of the low, that sort of person. And the police don't seem to deal with them and the judicial system doesn't seem to give them a sentence. So locally, there's significant support for those ones getting a hiding.
Yeah, and I'm glad you raised that, Frank, because I have to say, personally, for me, this is something that I've noted, and it's something that has been a subject of discussion amongst police and communities very recently. The Fresh Start report picked up on this, the panel report around disbanding paramilitaries. And I think it's interesting, and I mean, I was looking even this morning on social media, some of the newspaper stories around this and some of the comments by people after that, which pretty much exactly said what you said around policing isn't working, it isn't effective, and actually condoning this kind of conduct. And I suppose there's a couple of things to dwell on there. The first is the headline here, which is actually contrary to what people feel and think, crime is reducing in Northern Ireland. Northern Ireland is a safer place and our communities are safer. Secondly, confidence in policing actually has never been higher. And whilst there's still a long way to go to build trust, particularly in communities where that trust hasn't traditionally existed, we have come an awfully long way. But I think the time has come for us as a society to start to challenge this concept that people so easily seem to be able to throw about and talk about innocent and guilty victims of paramilitary-style attacks. Somebody, a community leader, put it to me like this. I mean, how would the media and others react if the police service turned up at a call and arrested a suspect, and instead of taking them to custody, where they get their rights and they get a chance to put across their account, they were dragged down an alleyway and shot in the leg? Society would be an uproar, and yet every day we tolerate and accept people who are beyond accountability, people who don't come on your show and don't offer any explanation for what they do, to mete out absolutely horrific injuries to members of the public who, regardless of whether they have been involved in criminality or not, that is not what a healthy society does.
But of course, but that small number of people living locally who do support them being beaten simply because they're tortured by them,
yeah,
they're accepting it because the police have failed those people.
Well, I think, and again, I'm going to challenge that because while statistics don't always offer us a lot of comfort, it demonstrates that our communities are getting safer. Now, I do, and again, the Fresh Start report spoke about this, and as a police service, we've acknowledged this with partners. There's a difference between being safe and feeling safe, and a lot of this debate focuses about how do we work with communities to help them feel safer. What worries me a little at times is this debate always focuses on the negatives. I think there are amazing positive stories coming from a lot of our communities who experience volume crime and antisocial behaviour of how we can deal with this in a positive way. Community-based restorative justice, the impact of our youth workers, some amazing people out there, and many of us will know people who dedicate their lives to working with young people to actually turn many lives around. And many of these people that we talk about as being criminals have themselves been victims and are themselves vulnerable. And I have been fortunate to see many, many examples of fantastic work in communities where those young people have had time and effort invested in them and they've been able to turn their lives around and contribute to society. What I know for a fact is, and the evidence and science says it, that shooting and beating these people does not work. It just simply brutalises them and undermines the very values in society that we should be standing up for. And anybody who goes out into a community and thinks by doing this that in some way they're contributing to community safety really needs to take a good, long, hard look at themselves, in my opinion.
You do talk almost in an ideal world of how to deal with the situation. As you said, there are four categories of people who are being attacked by the paramilitaries. There are those who have the drugs debt, those who just simply fall out with some hard man in the area, those who are absolutely innocent victims, mistaken identity, and this fourth category that we're concentrating on, whereby they are individuals who will literally terrorise a community because they feel that they can do as they please and enter any premises and cope with human beings in a way that is completely and utterly unacceptable. So there are those four categories, and you have described how you might deal with that fourth category and win the person back into some form of civilised society. Now, you will also have the finger pointed at you that as you're dealing with them, the police then let them off the leash again because they're almost in the police's pocket, literally in the police's pocket, whereby money is being exchanged for information on other things that might be happening in the area. Are the police prepared to accept that form of criticism?
No, I think what many of those comments, and this issue has been raised with me and with many of my colleagues in local meetings, because again, we are accountable to communities and we meet with them regularly to discuss these matters. I think in many ways that concerns and fears amongst communities about that underlie the need for us to invest further and to work harder in building trust between communities and police so that we understand, that police understand the needs of the communities that we serve, and often those are very complex, but that also communities understand that from the perspective of a police service, we're here to help and protect them, and we're here to work with them to solve a lot of these difficult problems. I saw the very, very positive statement by the Commissioner for Young People yesterday, Kula Yusuma, and I think she really hit the right tone there around the need for this to be a multi-agency response, for us to address shortcomings in education, for us to address health issues such as substance dependency, and for us to give young generation and wider generations hope, whilst also challenging those in communities who sadly still seek to exercise fear and control over those communities.
Yes, but would the police do a deal with an anti-social thug after they have brought him or her in, questioned them, realised that they're well connected, they know what's going on, they could feed information back, and for a few quid allow them to go back into the community to continue their low-life activities and to feed information back to you? Do the police hire people like that?
As a police service, we're governed by the law in relation to how we carry out activities such as that. We're also held to scrutiny by not only the Police Ombudsman, but the Office of the Surveillance Commissioner. And therefore, we're held to the very, very highest standards of how we operate that. We have a legal duty to protect the community and to protect individuals. And anything that we carry out must be to deliver on that. and we will continue to do that. It's not always easy, Frank, and in many of these positions, difficult decisions have to be made, but they're made with the highest level of scrutiny and the highest level of accountability. And from my perspective, I think it's clear that we need to revisit and encourage this further debate about how communities and police can work together to build safer communities.
And there are security-related issues. There have been deaths that have been security-related in the future, and the police have been security-related in the past, and the police in the recent past have been attacked. Those attacks, how difficult is that making the ordinary work that the police would claim to be doing? How are those attacks putting the police off providing that service?
So I don't think it's putting me or any of my colleagues off. I think actually it's a credit to all of the officers of the police service and actually the members of the community who work with us, that in the face of a consistent and persistent threat from a small number of people who seem to want to invest all of their energy in trying to drag us back into the past, that we still are working together to build a safer society, and the figures show that is working. And I think that's a really positive message. I think it's really positive that every day officers and members of the community get up, and in spite of the challenges and the threats that we see, we look at new and interesting ways to build a better society. And to me, that's what jumps out in all of this.
And do you have the staff to do what you need to do?
Certainly, there are still, you know, in the region of 7,000 police officers and 2,000 staff. That's an awful lot of people who can work with the 1.7 million people in Northern Ireland to make this place safer. And I think we can do that in new and innovative ways, and we'll constantly strive to do that. Our finances and our budget remain a consistent challenge, and we're constantly having to reassess how we do our business. But overall, we're constantly focusing on our primary objective, which is to keep people safe in Northern Ireland.
Well, Detective Superintendent, really appreciate your time this morning. Thanks for joining us, Tim.
Thanks, Frank. Thank you.